In a week of huge sports news all around, one of the biggest stories might be the one that actually no one is talking about. So that's why on this episode of Business Decision, I wanted to have on one of the few people who is reporting on it. As Jacob Feldman, a sports reporter for Sportico, sports business reporter for Sportico, and co-author of the Sunday Long Read newsletter, which I'm a huge and longtime subscriber to. Huge fan of. That makes sense. Those are the words that make sense. I'm Mike Vorkunov. I'm a reporter for The Athletic, but on this episode of Business Decision, I want to talk to Jacob about the big news of the day that's so big that no one wants to talk about it for some reason, which is a little confounding, but to me, really intriguing, as well as the big baseball indictments. And maybe we'll get into why I'm starting to think that maybe defense no longer wins championships in the NBA. But Jacob, let's get to the big news that we've been teasing and not talking about. Today, Goldman Sachs, pretty famous investment bank, I think we've all heard of it, announced that it's buying Excel Sports Management, a very prominent sports agency with some very famous clients, Caitlin Clark, Nikola Jokic, Derek Jeter represented, Tiger Woods, Cal Raleigh. Like, I'm sure the list will go on, and I'm forgetting a lot of people who would feel insulted that their names did not make this list. But they bought a majority stake in Excel Sports. The Financial Times reported last month that the deal is about to be valued at around $1 billion. I think that's pretty big news. And you reported on it today for Sportico, as did I. And I was curious what you thought of this and the news that now, not only that a huge investment bank or just the finance world is getting into further into sports agencies, but that it's Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, well, I think it's no surprise to see a sports agency get a lot of investment because we've seen this basically one a year for the last 3 or 4 years, it feels like. And people remember CAA, which is the biggest agency, was bought by a French billionaire from the world of luxury. And then we saw Endeavor, which owns a lot of different properties, including a lot in sports, but also WME, one of the largest agencies, get bought by Silver Lake, another private equity big player. So that, I think, wasn't the surprise. I think the interesting part here was the buyer, right? Like you're saying, it was Goldman Sachs, this company that, you know, is synonymous with finance for a lot of people, plays a large role in sports in another way in terms of helping people buy teams and sell teams, or helping media companies sell parts of themselves, which we can talk about, you know, kind of how that all is going to fit together. And then also making a larger consumer play. People have probably seen ads for Marcus. We've seen them sponsor golfers in particular. So trying to get their name out there that way. I'm curious to see how this plays into that. And that, to me, is what's most interesting here. It's just what is going to change in terms of Goldman's orientation towards sports, given, like you're saying, a near $1 billion likely investment in the people representing some of the biggest athletes in the world.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned all those other agencies that have gotten investments, right? Like Endeavor got into basketball through WME, got into baseball, then quickly got out of baseball for some tawdry reasons, perhaps. But now WME Sports, at least in basketball, is probably one of the most prominent agencies after they bought out Bill Duffy and BDA Associates. CAA went for a $7 billion valuation. TA bought into Clutch in 2019. I think the differentiation there was at least some logic there. There was these big Hollywood agencies that are getting into sports, right? It's another line of representation. There's, I think, horizontal integration there, let's call it. I think I'm using that correctly. And so you can say, hey, you know, we rep these people. We rep people in Hollywood and music and all that. Now let's get athletes in there, right? It's kind of interesting to me that Goldman is doing it because they're going to do it to make money. Like, that's why Goldman does it. That's why you use your private equity arm of Goldman Sachs, which is what made the investment to make money. And I'm curious how they do it, right? Obviously, look, salaries in pro sports are escalating to like almost exponentially every like half decade, right? We're going to have soon, probably within the next 8 years, an NBA player make $100 million a year. But that can't just be it. There's only so many $100 million a year athletes out there. I'm curious what you think the value they see is in it. I have an idea, but I want to hear what you think. Like, well, your first reaction was, like, okay, this is why Goldman Sachs wants to buy a sports agency.
Yeah, I'm very curious to hear your idea. I have two thoughts on this. One is, as you mentioned, sports valuations, whether it's the team, whether it's the league, whether it's the media deals, all exploding for reasons we can get into. But it is complicated to get into that business if you're somebody with a lot of money who wants to get into sports, somebody like Goldman Sachs. And so the agency route is a really interesting model because it allows you to play across a lot of different sports and kind of remain diversified that way. So that would be one. And then two is talking to a few people at XO, I think the biggest opportunity that they see is the global opportunity, as you mentioned. I mean, they are a massive agency, but they're not that old. I think they were founded in 2002 and were primarily focused on the US. But when you look at the sports where they're deepest, like golf and basketball, those are global sports and increasingly so. And so does this new injection of money and the platform that Goldman Sachs brings with it allow them to go out and grow in Europe, grow in Asia, grow in Africa? That's my expectation of where they're saying, okay, this is a way, like you're saying, to 5X, 10X, or even beyond this investment.
Yeah, I think that's a great reason. I think that makes a lot of sense. And, I think Jeff Schwartz, the founder of Accel, said in a statement today, like, hey, this is our next stage of growth. And what you listed is obviously growth opportunity for them, right? Like now you have the backing to grow because I think it's kind of expensive to attract new clients and to get into new markets. I'm not even saying that facetiously. Like there's a lot of upfront costs with being an agent, right? Like if you think about the NBA draft, you're housing draft prospects for months, you're feeding them, you're training them. And that's before you see a dollar on them. Maybe there's some kind of marketing advance. So it is a capital intensive business. And I don't know if people think about it like that. The thing that came to mind for me was Goldman Sachs, I think, from what I understand about the business, is now a lot of it is wealth management, right? Like in dealing with a lot of those types of high net worth individuals and deploying their money. Well, they just bought themselves a pathway to getting a relationship with a lot of wealthy people, right? Like I'm not saying that, hey, if you sign with Accel, you're putting your money into Goldman Sachs. Like I think that would probably be illegal to some degree to force that kind of relationship. But if you're signing with Accel Sports, I mean, why wouldn't you trust Goldman Sachs to handle your money, to invest your money, to be the kind of wealth management company of record for you if you're going to go down that pathway? And like that builds a lot of relationships, I think, for Goldman Sachs that might have been more difficult for them to build organically in the past that you now have a pathway into a little more easy.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I like that concept a lot. And I think from the other perspective, too, we are seeing athletes, even by the time they are drafted, already thinking about themselves as burgeoning business empires, thinking about how they want to set themselves up long term. And so, yeah, if you're meeting with agents, I want to say, look, we are part of Goldman Sachs. We, you know, help some of the wealthiest individuals build global businesses. And we'd love to help you do that, too. That's a really compelling pitch, I would think, to somebody who wants to get into the business side of sports like so many of these athletes now do. Because, I mean, ultimately, you know, especially as we see these salary caps get stricter and stricter across leagues, like the contract negotiation part of it becomes less of a value from the agent's perspective, right? I mean, there's only so much wiggle room when you're signing up a Supermax deal in the NBA. But I think what we're seeing is these agencies differentiating themselves based on what can we offer you off the court, whether it's can we help you become an owner in a different league or can we help you build brand deals and things like that. And so that, I think, is really going to be a differentiator going forward.
Yeah, and if you are recruiting a player, potential high pick who fancies himself to be that person in the future, right? You know what really helps, I would guess, in the marketing pitch? And feel free to steal this, future Accel agent. You know what helps you get into deal flow? Goldman Sachs helps you get into deal flow, right?
Yeah.
Goldman Sachs knows what's going on. I do wonder, though, if we talk about what it brings to Goldman Sachs and to Accel, it does kind of close the door on something, right? Yeah. We've seen a lot of private equity firms, big financial institutions get into owning pro sports teams, right? Yeah. Like Ares, Apollo just bought Atletico Madrid. I think you guys were the ones to report that at Sportico, if I remember correctly. There's plenty of other examples, right? But you can't own a sports team or a piece of a sports team and own an agency. Like that won't fly. We've seen a lot of people get conflicted out. Like we just saw that with WME, right?
Exactly.
They had to spin out WME basketball because Michael Dell, who's an investor in Endeavor, also a minority investor in the Spurs. So they said, okay, we can't do that anymore. So it is interesting to me, at least, that this is the path that Goldman Sachs chose.
Exactly.
Unlike others, where they said, okay, we're going to do this part of sports instead of the other part of sports.
Yeah, and I think I understand it. I mean, it's a pretty attractive proposition because it is easier to transact. As we're saying, we've seen a lot of buying and selling of these various agencies compared to a minority stake in a team, which can be a little more complicated from a private equity perspective. It's a little bit different investment than buying a company, which is something that they're very used to. And as I mentioned, it gets you into a lot of sports at once. But it is really interesting to see them say, look, we don't need to go down that path of Sixth Street or CVC, who have done all these deals with individual teams or even at the league level in some cases, because this does close them off from that, I would think. And you know, who knows exactly structurally, we can get into like the endeavor and of it all. Like, nothing's ever fully closed if you move things around the right way. But it certainly indicates that they think they want to be on the player side. They see the player side of the business growing faster than the team and league side, I would think, is what this demonstrates. And so that's a really interesting position for them to take.
Yeah, and I wonder if they feel like it's cheaper to get into this than it would be to get in on team side, because valuations are just going up forever. Where's the haircut there? We're like, where's the deal you're going to find?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Team valuations have gone up, 5-10x, whereas player contracts and compensation has gone up a lot, but hasn't been keeping pace with those insane, quote unquote insane prices we've seen over the last couple of years in some cases.
I wonder if they try to change the economics of being an agent as well. I know that's not all that Excel does. Obviously, they have an executive advisory firm. They have a marketing arm, like all these things. But
events on down the line, yeah.
Yeah, all of that. And like, but primarily everyone thinks of them as agents, right?
That's the core business.
And so how much wiggle room is there to extract more from contracts? Will it just be on the marketing side, right? Like in NIL, in the NBA, at least the max an agent can take is 4%. That's, and for the higher end clients, you don't always get 4%. Same rules for the WNBA, I believe, and the NFL and all these, in baseball, all these other sports have their own rules, but there's a cap on it. Marketing, where there's a lot of money to be made for off-court contracts for a lot of the players, have much higher margins. You know, you're taking, look, up to 20% on a marketing fee, right? Like NIL, I've heard of 20% agent fees on NIL deals. Do you think this will impact how Excel can make money on its clients?
I think it's worth probably spending another second too about, I think another big growth opportunity is college, right? I mean, that is a massive market of athletes that previously didn't have official representation and or official contracts and now do. And so I imagine that they're looking at that as another growth area. But I also think the world of NIL really emphasizes the degree to which, as you were saying, like the athletic on the court aspect of this is a decreasing percentage of an athlete's appeal to brands to otherwise. And I think even to athletes' own self-identity, like, look, I play basketball, but I also produce music or am on YouTube or all these sorts of things. I think the line we've really seen blur. And even on the broadcaster side too, right? We've seen the line kind of blur between what somebody does professionally for one entity, but also what they do for themselves or what they want to build. So yeah, I would imagine that it is kind of reframing, an agent beyond just the negotiation point to being more strategic and more focused on brand building.
Do you think Goldman Sachs is here to stay? Will this be a quick flip, or you think we're going to see them in this line of work for a while?
I don't have any insight into this, but yeah, my expectation would be this is a long play. This is a 10 plus year play. And my other inclination would be, yes, it's hard for them to get into teams or leagues at this point, but I would expect that they are going to find other ways into sports, whether it is on the event side, whether it is stadium financing or something along those lines. I think we are seeing, for better or for worse, we can get into this too, but there is a pent-up demand from investors to invest in sports because of how much it's growing, because of how sexy of an asset class it is. And so, Goldman Sachs, as much as anybody else, is going to say, what else can we do in this space for sure? This isn't even a starting point because, as I said, they've been doing some stuff in the past, but this is just the next step in that process.
Yeah. What a wild time for Goldman Sachs. A few months ago, they helped Bill Chisholm buy the Celtics. Now they're buying an agency for Excel who will have players on the Celtics. finance is not just dipping its toes in the water of the sports world anymore. They are now getting into the pool altogether. That is horrible.
As you mentioned, though, I mean, it seems like every transaction at this point has some element of private equity or financial firm tied to it, whether it's an individual from one of these firms or whether it is the firm itself getting involved, because it is at this point, you kind of need that kind of money to buy some of these teams and to invest in them the way you need to. It's not just, the one-off Jerry Jones plumping down $100 million and going into business. So, it will be interesting to see what that professionalization, what that financialization ends up doing for the agency world. But Excel, I think, needed to do this to keep up with everybody else who is also increasingly backed by these massive entities.
Yeah, and that's kind of the last question I had for you on this is, CAA just got bought at a $7 billion valuation. Clutch has UTA's backing behind it. WME Sports, BDA, WME Sports, I'm thinking about the NBA specifically, but obviously there's other sports leagues and stuff there. Like, if you're not backed by a big Hollywood agency, or you're not backed by now lots of capital behind you, are you going to have trouble kind of keeping up? Like, we now see an arms race, really, right? Like, in sports representation, I think, for all these agencies.
Yeah, I'm sure. Wasserman, I think, had a Redbird investment, maybe Providence Equity as well. Octagon, I'm sure, is an investment. I mean, yeah, you basically have to. And the other thing in this world, as you know, is it's a constant acquisition, selling, agents moving. I mean, there's a lot of M&A kind of constantly in this world between places, and I don't expect that to end. I only expect that seller, especially as we're talking about global and kind of the land race in some of these cases to make a footprint to build a business. So I would say it's a good time to be in the agency business because there's such demand on both ends of it right now.
Yeah, there's not a lot of room left for the individual proprietor there, for the agent who wants to kind of like do it on his own.
Right. It's harder than ever to break in, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So I want to pivot from Goldman Sachs betting on athletes to athletes betting on themselves, but not in a good way.
In a sense. Yes.
Yes. Sure. In a bad
betting
way.
Against themselves in some case. Right. Yeah.
Yes. I'm talking, of course, about the federal indictments brought this past weekend against two Cleveland Guardians pitchers, Emmanuel Clase and Luis Ortiz, alleged by the federal government of basically rigging their own pitches so that a few bettors based in the Dominican Republic, according to the indictment released Sunday, could make money on it. And this is the latest sports gambling scandal. And by latest, I mean like the other one was 2 weeks ago.
Right. As of recording. Yes. I don't know how quick this is getting out. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. This, we're going to try to get this out quickly. Things can change so quickly now. This one is a little bit different because baseball is obviously a little bit different, but Emmanuel Clase is accused by federal prosecutors of colluding with sports bettors to intentionally throw balls on the first pitch of at least 9 pitches and at a certain velocity so that those bettors could win prop bets on him, right? Both on the velocity and the ball strike prop bet. And then Clase bet on himself through bettors as well, according to the indictment, and then also start to work with Luis Ortiz, another Guardians pitcher in this season, the 2025 season, where he was allegedly in on it as well. Important to note, I think Luis Ortiz has denied this through a lawyer, and I think Emmanuel Clase will be making his first appearance in federal court later this week. But what do you make of this, Jacob? What was your first thought when you heard about this indictment? And something we had, you know, we knew there was something fishy going on that neither of those had really pitched since I believe it was July when MLB put him on administrative leave. But were you surprised to see the indictments? What was your reaction to it?
Yeah, it was interesting. I was not surprised. One of the things that jumped out, I think people were surprised by how low some of the financial figures were in terms of what they were getting paid to rig these pitches. And I think that goes to a misunderstanding, as far as I understand it, with the legal process, in terms of, you know, the prosecutors are really going to only allege certain wrongdoings that they can then prove. And it doesn't necessarily mean that that's all of the wrongdoing. So that, I think, was one of the things I was interested to be in. And it goes to point out that I think rapidly fans and the media and consumers in general are going to start to understand this a lot better. But initially, there's always, it seems to be, a lot of misunderstanding, hyperbole, paranoia, conspiracy around these things. And it's fascinating to kind of see that play out in real time. And I think, you know, these court cases will likely go on for years. And I think we'll kind of get a better sense of just how widespread these things were. But right now, you could reasonably say, okay, this was two people. The technology caught them very quickly. This is a sign of the system working. Or I think you can right now believe, oh, this is going on everywhere. These are just the only ones they could prove. And I can't take anything seriously right now. And I think you could, again, reasonably hold either of those things in your mind. And I don't know at what point we'll kind of have certainty in terms of which one is more accurate.
Yeah, I mean, from now on, next season, every time there's a first pitch ball in the dirt, I mean, I think fans, understandably so, would now be like, wait, was that real? Like, was that on purpose? You know, that's kind of what it's done to baseball, right? Like, that's what the indictments have done to the NBA, the gambling indictments.
I was going to say, we've already seen that, like, days after the Terry Rozier indictment comes out, as soon as there's, you know, a late basket in a meaningless game that moves, you know, crosses the total, across the spread or anything like that, you have people instantly pointing it out. And again, without any real conviction or evidence that there was any kind of malicious intent there. But it goes to just exactly what you're saying of well, once there's a couple of these, it's very hard to protect the credibility of the game, if not the integrity of it.
Yeah. I mean, baseball moved with the sports books that it works with to make sure that prop bets on pitches like ball strike prop bets and velocity prop bets, you can't bet more than $200 on it. Mm-hmm. They can't be part of parlays, which is, again, two of the things that were alleged to have done by the people working with Emmanuel Clase, who have not been charged. Clase and Ortiz have been charged. I'm going to ask, like, almost the same thing when the NBA worked with sportsbooks to, like, ban underbets on prop bets for two-way players. Like, is that enough? Does that restore enough confidence? Like, there seems like baseball especially, which is so individualized, has a lot of questions related to how it can kind of gamble-proof itself.
Yeah, these responses are fascinating to me because it does seem like the leagues are talking out of both sides of their mouth. On one hand, they're saying, well, look, we caught these guys because betting is legal. It's a good thing this is out in the public. It's a good thing that we can track these bets. And then at the same time, they're saying, okay, these bets, we should actually move back to black markets. We shouldn't have these be tracked. We should not make it possible for us to be able to follow the money in these situations. It's better if these don't exist in the public markets. Like, well, it seems like a very fine line you're walking in terms of it's worth having these bets and not have those bets available. And I am curious to see kind of what pushback we see over time, or maybe it does, you know, ultimately make sense that, like, okay, yeah, we can actually have a certain quantity of bet types that are reasonable to protect and don't, and, you know, involve enough multiple people such that they can't be rigged. And then we have this other group that we're just going to ignore and pretend never happened. Maybe that is the ultimate equilibrium we get to.
Yeah. You talk to some sportsbook people who run sportsbooks, they say, well, you know, like, rigged games have always existed. You just couldn't catch them before, which I guess is a double-edged sword for sports leagues because now that you can catch them, you get a lot of
right. That is not an argument you'll hear a commissioner say, I don't think. Yeah,
no. And even in the NBA gambling indictment, if I remember, at least one of those bets was placed out of an illegal sports book, right? So it's not as if that isn't something they have been doing so far. Mm-hmm. But I want to end the podcast soon. And usually every podcast, I'm going to try to ask someone who comes on, my guest, to make one big business decision, right? To make one big decision for me. And I'm going to hit you with a big question. Okay. So before we go, Jacob Feldman, your business decision for the week. Would you trade Luka Doncic?
Would I trade Luka Doncic? Would I trade him back? Would I ask for a trade back? Would I say, hey, look, that GM, he's not here anymore. we were thinking maybe we just wipe the slate clean. I guess I give the Lakers a call and see what they say.
If you're the Lakers, do you trade Luka Doncic?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, that probably was the advice that Nico Harrison should have listened to before he traded Luka Doncic. He was fired earlier today, recording this on Tuesday, by the Dallas Mavericks. Things have gone awry very quickly.
Yeah, in Dallas. And it's a shame because he did make some good moves, which people will not remember in the annals of history, but it shows it just takes one bad one.
Yeah, I mean, what? So about 17 months ago, the Mavericks were in the finals.
Right.
You know, he just received an extension. things were looking good for him.
Right, exactly. So let that be a lesson to everybody. You know, one bad decision is all it takes to send your career careening in a direction you were not expecting.
Yeah, and that actually might be wisdom for a lot of the segments that we've had on this podcast so
far. That's true,
yeah.
So one bad business decision, yes, is the spinoff title, yeah.
Yes. Jacob, thank you for coming on. Read all of his reporting at Sportico. Read Sportico. I do every day. I think it's a great publication. You guys do an amazing job of covering the sports, business, and finance world. Frankly, there's so many deals going on everywhere. I don't know how you do it. And there's so much sports media stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, it's insane.
Wake up every day and decide what crazy thing is going to happen today. It's a fun job. Yeah,
I know. Read Jacob. Read Sportico. Subscribe to Sunday Long Read. I have been for a number of years. I love it. It's a great, you know, media journalism newsletter. There's a lot of great stories in there that you will love and enjoy. Get it every Sunday. You and Don Van Natta do an amazing job with that as well. I don't know how you have time to read all those and do your job, to be honest.
I don't either. It's the reason I do it is to make me continue to read long form journalism. And so I do manage to find the time. Commuting helps. But yeah, it's a labor of love for sure.
Yeah, totally. And thank you for coming on to this show. Everyone, thank you for watching and listening. Subscribe to Business Decision on YouTube and where you get your podcasts. And we'll catch you on the next episode. Bye.